B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome to Checkpoint XP Daily for Tuesday, April 2nd, 2019, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on CBS Sports Radio 1300 in Baltimore, as well as the Ticket 1230 in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. Today on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll get the latest in esports and gaming news from Sarah Skopic over at the Checkpoint News Desk. Plus, we'll play another round of Name That Price Craigslist Edition. Those conversations are ahead here today on Checkpoint XP Daily. But we have to start today with a super important piece of news that could threaten the internet as we know it. Last week, the UK moved forward with Article 13. For those of you who don't know, Article 13 could theoretically hold platforms like YouTube or Twitch responsible for the copyright infringement of its users. Since we're all laymen, we decided to bring in an expert on the subject. He's a video game lawyer who specializes in patents, trademarks, and copyrights, and he's also a good friend of the show, Mark Whipple. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
So, Mark, let's start at the beginning. What exactly is Article 13?
Okay. Just for fun, by the way, Article 13 is no longer Article 13. One of the last things they did before they actually passed it was change all the article numbers. So what was Article 11 is now Article 15. What was Article 13 is now Article 17. So if you actually go on the internet looking for the law as passed, please note that the numbers have changed. Basically, I believe the EC just has it in for lawyers.
Got it. Article 17, then.
So, yes, Article 17.
Article 17 is the one that most of your viewers are probably going to be worried about. They are all part. These articles imply they're part of a bigger document, which they are. It's called the Directive on Copyright in the Digital Single Market. The Digital Single Market is fancy speak for the European Economic Community's online constituents. You know, the European Union and the European Economic Community consider themselves a single large market, much the way that the United States is a single large market of individual states. So this big document passed. Most of it has nothing to do with the things that everybody's freaking out about. A lot of it is very standard modernization stuff. But of course, everybody's worried about articles what used to be 11 and 13. Article 11, now Article 15, has to do with reusing and reposting news content. Also very important to a lot of people who have websites, but probably not the big concern that Article now 17 is to most of your listeners and your viewers. Article 17 is about what happens to what it calls online content sharing service providers, by which it means people like YouTube or Google or Twitch, whose business is to allow other people to provide content for viewing and access by third parties. Twitch itself does produce content, obviously, but mostly what it does is host streams like this one. And they're saying that they are going to change the rules related to what liabilities those kind of content sharing service providers provide.
Right. So someone who is the copyright holder, say they find their copyrighted content on one of these services, this article allows the copyright holder to hold the service, the network, the provider of the service, accountable for what its user put on to that service, correct?
Exactly right. Neither of these articles greatly expands the rights of copyright holders. They haven't made copyright any easier to get. They haven't made the actual fundamental copyright broader. What they've changed is who is liable for potential infringements. For Article 17, in the U.S., we have the Digital Millennium Copyright Act and Section 203 of the Telecommunications Decency Act that provide a lot of liability insurance or shielding for people like YouTube, for entities like YouTube, etc. In Europe, they are, with these articles, moving away from that in that they are making it more of a positive obligation. In the U.S. now, you kind of have to tell YouTube and put them on notice, or Twitch, send them that takedown notice, whatever, and if they respond accordingly, then they're probably going to be okay. Now, they basically, and this is vastly oversimplified, nothing I'm going to say is legal advice, but once they allow it to be posted, they now have to argue why they shouldn't be held accountable, as opposed to you having to show why they should be accountable.
So is this going to affect, you know, everybody, or is this just in the EU?
It is just in the EU. And as Nate mentioned just a second ago, it is mostly passed, but still not entirely passed. It has passed the European Commission. Now each individual country in the EU has to pass national laws that actually put it into effect. As of right this second, it doesn't have any legal effect, even though it's been passed by the European Commission. So Germany and France, et cetera, have to pass laws that have to be in accord with what the EU now says their rules have to be. But right this second, they can't do anything. So once that happens, then yes, every country that passes one of those laws, that's where you're going to be liable. The thing is, if you're in the US and you post on YouTube and you post content that the EU thinks it has the right to protect, they can come after you.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. We're sitting down with entertainment lawyer Mark Whipple talking about the recently voted on piece of legislation, Article 13, now 17 in the European Union.
So with Twitch and YouTube being as massive as they are and used by so many people, even just in the EU, how do they go about enforcing or reacting to something like this?
They're still probably not going to be what I call copyright police. We don't have them in the U.S. Nobody has them. The copyright holder has to do something affirmatively. I own the copyright. I have to complain to somebody, sue them, send a notice, do something. Once that happens, under the law of the nation, the content sharing service, the YouTube or the Twitch, I'm just going to say Twitch from now on, even though Twitch is awesome, they're just going to be our guinea pig. They go to Twitch and say, they posted my content, take it down and pay me damages. And Twitch will say, under what principle? And they will say, under the principle that you have allowed people in Germany to access Twitch streams, and this is my content, and I'm in Germany, and it's a German copyright. And then Twitch can either take it down and pay damages as requested, or they can argue. But that's the fundamental mechanism of enforcement.
So when it comes to, you know, how these big, gigantic sites like YouTube, like Twitch, will end up reacting, I've seen a couple of proposed scenarios, and I want to know how likely one of these would be. I've heard of, you know, possible partitioning into, you know,
Twitch.eu.
Yeah, only servicing EU IP addresses. So, you know, Twitch.eu, YouTube.eu. But I've also heard that kind of a worst case scenario here is that in order to kind of protect themselves, that these large websites will enact policies that will restrict the creative freedom of its users across the entire platform, if only to protect itself from lawsuits.
That is entirely possible. Given the analogies that we have so far, for example, it is illegal in some countries to post certain content regarding the Holocaust or related to Nazism. And so far, we haven't seen sites go over the deep end on that, even though these are actually much stricter laws in many ways than these copyright directives will probably be.
Sure.
Partitioning certainly happens. Geofencing is another term for it. But as far as YouTube just saying, hey, nobody in the world, you know, everybody in the world has to adhere to the strictest copyright laws of any place we operate, that so far has not happened, and I think that's a low probability.
So a lot of people are concerned about the precedent that Article now 17 sets. Are they right to be concerned, or are people sounding the alarm too soon? Could something like this eventually reach American shores?
I think they're right to be concerned in general, in that this is a major shift in the policy preferences of a very large, you know, collection of nation states.
Well, and it seems to indicate successful lobbying, too.
Yeah.
There was a lot of lobbying, and I think that a lot of the big content providers, by and large, would rather not have this.
Mm-hmm.
But they'd rather have this than what it originally started out as. They did have a great deal of influence on its ultimate wording.
So Twitch CEO Emmett Shear was vocally critical of the legislation. He called it poorly drafted. In your opinion, do you consider this legislation to be, quote, poorly drafted, or would you say that this is fairly well written for what it does?
I would say that it could be a lot better. I wouldn't say it was poorly drafted, especially when you consider, like I said, what this really is not the end law. This is the rules that all the member states now have to write, and those laws that they write will be much longer and much more specific.
So in your opinion, do you think that Article 13, now 17, is a step in the right direction for, you know, overall intellectual property law? Or do you think that this is a dangerous step for people to kind of fence in what they can kind of legally claim as theirs?
Yes. Couldn't help it. I am not a particular advocate of what the policy preferences being expressed in this document are. I think that things could be done differently and it would work out better on the whole for society. I think that the goals they're trying to achieve are ones that need to be addressed. We can't go on forever pretending the internet is not real life and nothing that happens there counts, especially as we move into a society where more and more people are dependent on creativity for their livelihood.
So let's get down to brass tacks. Here's the real important part. People are saying that our memes could be affected by Article 13 and 17.
Because somebody thinking of memes.
Right. Are the memes safe?
Memes are illegal. Everybody knows that.
Well, sorry.
It's over. Couldn't help it. Video game joke. Anyway, the article as passed, and I'm even going to read it so it will be part of the record, contains a very broad exception, which reads, member states, by which they mean the individual countries of the EU, shall ensure that members in each member state are able to rely on any of the following existing exceptions or limitations when uploading and making available content generated by users on online content sharing services. A, purposes of quotation, criticism, or review. B, use for the purpose of caricature, parody, or pastiche. There's your memes.
The
right
memes
here.
Are safe.
The memes are safe. There you go, guys. You can breathe a sigh of relief. Mark Whipple, entertainment lawyer, has been our guest here today on Checkpoint XP. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. That's at Legal Inspire. And make sure you check out his blog where he writes about stuff like this and much more at legalinspiration.com. Mark, thank you so much for your time today here on Checkpoint XP.
Glad to be here. Always glad.
All right. Well, listen, we want to hear from you. Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll play another round of Name That Price Craigslist Edition. And to celebrate PAX East last weekend, we'll be pulling items from the Boston area. That'll wrap up today's Checkpoint XP Daily. But ahead next, Sarah Skopic will join us to give us all the latest in esports and gaming news. That's ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
And welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming radio. I want to thank everyone listening on the Talk of Las Vegas, 101.5 FM and 720 AM, as well as KJR 950 in Seattle, Washington. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll get the latest in esports news from over at the news desk with Sarah Skopic. Plus, in honor of PAX East being held in Boston, we'll play another round of Name That Price Craigslist Edition, this time Boston. You're in the hot seat. Those discussions are ahead in about 15 minutes here on Checkpoint XP Daily. But first, let's check in with Sarah Skopic over at the Checkpoint News Desk and get a gaming news update.
Gaming News Update with Sarah Skopic.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program to bring you important news.
CheckpointXP.com.
Nintendo is partnering up with Twitch Prime to bring Switch Online to users for free. By having both a Twitch Prime account and a Nintendo account, users will be able to unlock 3 free months of Switch Online. 60 days later, if both accounts are still active, they'll unlock another 9 months for free. It's an interesting move for a company that has so long taken a stance against people showing off their games.
I love this.
They keep giving you reasons to, like, have Prime. Like, you know, you get the stuff on Twitch, you get your free sub, now you get your free Nintendo Online. It's like $100 a year at this point. Why do you not have it?
Yeah, and I don't want to poo-poo this because it is great, but I mean, aren't you only saving like what isn't the Switch Online like $12?
Yeah,
$20
for a year. You only saving like I don't know 65 cents. Yeah. I don't know.
But I mean, those people who are looking for an added value for jumping into Twitch Prime, yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's a great idea.
I think the more interesting point here is Nintendo partnering with someone like Twitch. Oh, yes. I mean, for the longest time they were so strict about what they would allow of their games to be shown off.
Yeah.
For them to actively partner up with Twitch is very interesting to me.
Absolutely.
Fallout 76 has introduced its new survival mode as the second phase of the Wild Appalachia expansion. The new mode adds to the chaos of the game by removing most of the game's PvP restrictions.
This is a hellscape of PvP. It is a complete and utter chaos. I have not stepped into it. It's terrifying.
The human era is over.
I'm level 206 in Fallout 76, and I'm looking at that like, no way, I love my aid items. I'm not going to just drop all of them. Well, that's ridiculous.
And as is the nature of, especially PvP-based stuff when it first comes out, and in a world like Fallout 76, you know, people are looking at, how can we break this? How can we find ways to use this to our advantage?
Yeah, it's definitely going to take a little bit more development. Obviously, the survival mode is still in beta. But it's going to take a couple of updates to specifically where people spawn in. Spawn points are going to be a big point of contention
right now. That speaks to the ethos of 76. I mean, the whole game has been based off we will fix it as you play it.
And to that point, Norris, actually, the Fallout 76 dev team did a panel out at PAX East over the weekend, and that's what they said. That's very much built into the ethos of the development of that game, is get it out into the hands of the public and then figure out the problems later. And I think that shows in the way that the game has been received by the public, but it also shows in the way that it's been malleable, inventive, and creative.
At least they got their plan and they're sticking to it. I'll give them credit for that.
Ubisoft has confirmed their presence at this year's E3 conference. They'll be hosting their press conference for E3 2019 on Monday, June 10th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. It remains unclear what titles we'll see out of Ubisoft, as most of their mainline titles we know about will have launched by then, though it's likely we'll hear more about Beyond Good and Evil 2.
I'm excited.
Yes. I was about to say, it's funny because Ubisoft has literally gone from, I can skip that, to, I literally like have to be there now.
Give us more Beyond Good and Evil.
But not even just that, we could get an announcement of the next Assassin's Creed.
You know what else? I bet we see a new Rabbids property after the success of Mario.
Well, we know that we're going to see a ridiculous dance number probably done by members of Cirque du Soleil.
There'll be a conga line into the conference, I'm sure. Yeah,
that's right. Some kind of Just Dance game is going to be announced. And I don't know. I think that, you know, it's been a couple of years since the last South Park game came out, so we may get another one of those. I'm looking forward to it. This is the first Ubisoft conference in a while that I've really looked forward to.
We now have a release date for the Sega Genesis Mini. It'll launch worldwide on September 19th, 2019, and we'll have 40 games on it at launch. Currently, we know 10 of those games, which are Echo the Dolphin, Castlevania Bloodlines, Space Harrier 2, Shining Force,
yes.
Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine,
yes.
Toe Jam and Earl,
yes.
Comic Zone,
yes.
Sonic the Hedgehog,
yes.
Altered Beast,
yeah.
and Gunstar Heroes.
Oh my gosh.
The console will retail for $80 in the States.
Nope. No Streets of Rage 2.
This is only 10 out of 40.
Nope.
It's 10 out of 40. There's still a chance that it might be included in
it
there. But you've got a couple of key key titles in there. Castlevania Bloodlines, absolutely. Shining Force, for
yes.
sure. Comic Zone, Toe Jam and Earl. Are you kidding me?
Gunstar Heroes, that's my childhood.
This is really a better collection, a better set of collection of games than the Super Nintendo. I don't know. I think that this might actually get some traction.
Better have Madden 95.
Elder Scrolls Blade suddenly became available for some people who registered for early access last week. The game is visually pretty good and the gameplay is okay, but people are not happy about the monetization. The ability to open chests is locked behind a wait timer that can, of course, be skipped if you pay real money. People who were hoping for it to be similar to Fallout Shelter are so far pretty disappointed.
Well, hang on. First of all, question. Was any of us able to actually get this to work on their
Me.
Phone.
Nope. Your device
oh,
isn't
no,
compatible
is
with this
old.
Version.
His
same,
old.
Same.
But he got the email.
Same.
His works.
Mine
works. I didn't even get the
Yours
email.
Works.
Mine works.
You played
wow.
it?
I did play it.
What do you think?
It's boring.
Oh.
It's real. So here's the thing.
Like
the
even
combat,
for a phone game.
The combat is the absolute worst. It's not any fun at all. I hate it. That said, like, I get why people are liking like the building aspect and creating your town. That actually has a lot of stuff to it, which is nice. But the monetization and the wait timers is the worst.
But it's a free game. They gotta monetize it somehow. Like, get over it.
Do you see a way for it to get better?
Yeah, just make it so that the silver chests don't have such a long wait time. It'd be pretty playable at that point.
Fair enough.
While we do know that Bethesda will be hosting an E3 press conference, we're having trouble figuring out exactly what they intend to show. Over the weekend, Bethesda confirmed that neither Starfield nor Elder Scrolls 6 will be present at this year's E3, and that both games are still a ways off, especially Elder Scrolls 6.
Ooh. Yeah, they did say this. I watched the entirety of the panel because, of course, they're celebrating 25 years
Correct.
Of the Elder Scrolls franchise, and they did say in pretty clear terms, Elder Scrolls 6 is not going to be at E3, but it is 25 years, and I would not hold it against them if they were just to outright lie about that.
Or like they did last year, just give some type of small tease of it, like a title.
Here's what this does make me excited for. This means that I think id has a much more central role to play in their E3 presentation this year, so I'm looking forward to seeing something big
just
out of it.
As long as we don't get Bethesda Land.
And now, well, yeah, no Bethesda Land, but we've also been hearing possible rumors of remakes and remasters of Fallout 3 or Fallout New Vegas. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping to see a little bit more on the Fallout end. Maybe they feel like they got something to make up with 76. I don't know, but I'm excited to see what they bring to the show.
When PlayerUnknown announced he'd be heading up a new division within PUBG Corp, many wondered what exactly that meant. He's now said in an interview that he's leaving behind the Battle Royale genre and will be focusing on something new entirely. He also ruled out the possibility of PUBG 2.
You know what? Good for him.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what he ends up doing.
Yeah, you were successful. Move on.
And that's all for the Checkpoint XP Gaming News Update. For more, head on over to our website, checkpointxp.com.
Thanks, Sarah, for the update. The beginning of the month marked April Fool's Day, which over the years has gone from being pretty fun to now just really stupid and cringy.
Yeah.
That said, we did want to call attention to someone who handled the day very well.
Yeah, and this is kind of difficult for us because we have, of course, had a long and complicated history with Reddit and with subreddits. However, r/games decided to treat April Fool's Day in a kind of unique and strong way. They decided they were going to close down their subreddit on one of their busiest days of the year. And instead put up a post calling out basically to protest bigotry within their subreddit and within the gaming community. They also put up a bunch of links to charities for people of color or for women or for LGBT causes. So while we do have a complicated history with Reddit, which we acknowledge, this is one we kind of want to highlight and say this is pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I think that this is definitely a good thing. Obviously, we talk about this all the time. It's kind of mostly referred to as the toxicity with inside gaming.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's something that we all experience. And I think on a regular enough basis where no one can deny that this is a problem. And good on r/games for acknowledging that, because that even that it sometimes in 2019 is a pretty brave step.
And I love the fact that they did it on April Fool's Day, knowing that people would be on our games, specifically looking for all of the April Fool's jokes that different games and publishers put out. I think that was really imaginative and really cool. And yeah, I just got to applaud them for doing something like this. I hope that all of these charities and these links that they put up saw noticeable uptick.
If this type of thing upset you at all, we don't need this and we should have been able to blah 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 blah.
You're the problem.
You are the problem.
You're the problem.
Now, Nate, you have
it's kind of like every group of friends has a stupid one. And if you don't know who it is, you're the stupid one.
That's right. Yeah.
You kind of hit on this. Like, April Fool's Day used to be the best day of the year in the gaming community. It really did.
Oh yeah, you looked forward to it.
And now it really has this guy. And the problem is that literally everyone does something for it. It needed to be like when and it was like, hey, Blizzard and Square Enix are probably going to put out some funny patch notes today. It's going to be a good day. But now it's like everyone
does it. You can't trust the internet. The internet becomes an unfun place.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Whole day, the whole Ugh. Day. All right. Well, listen, we want to hear from you. Do you think that this is a smart thing for our games to do? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint, we'll play another round of Name That Price Craigslist Edition. And to celebrate PAX East last weekend, we'll be pulling items from the Boston area. That's right, Boston. We've been all up in your Craigslist. But ahead next, we'll check in with Sarah over at the... But ahead next, we'll check in with Sarah over at the Checkpoint News Desk.
Will this decision be able to save GameStop from closing?
Esports News is next here on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at CheckpointXP.com. This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on 98.5, the Sports Hub of Boston, as well as the Team 980 in Washington, D.C. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll play another round of Name That Price Craigslist Edition in honor of PAX East over the weekend. We'll be taking a look at items from Boston. That conversation will wrap up today's Checkpoint XP Daily. But first, let's check in with Sarah Skopic over at the Checkpoint News Desk and get an esports gaming update.
Esports gaming update with Sarah Skopic.
GameStop is looking to make a major pivot away from just selling video games. They struggle to find their place in the modern gaming world. They've turned their eyes towards esports, making a host of massive investments. They've struck partnerships with Complexity Gaming, Infinite Esports, and Envy Gaming, as well as the Houston Outlaws and Dallas Fuel Overwatch teams. They'll be hosting watch parties for Overwatch League and have also partnered with the Collegiate Star League.
This is really interesting. Now, first of all, I love the idea of GameStop pivoting focus from just being a retailer to starting to do more event-based stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, like watch parties. I love the idea of watch parties because that's a way that an entire city ends up adopting a team as theirs, right? Like,
they're going way bigger than that as well. They're partnering with Complexity to open a new GameStop Performance Center.
Oh, wow.
Which they say is going to be the most advanced esports facility in the country down in Texas.
And this is all really cool. And then when I think about it, you can start selling esports retail jerseys and stuff like that, too. I think this is a really intelligent pivot for GameStop.
And I mean, we've been wondering, okay, how does esports make its way to Middle America? I can't name a city that doesn't have a GameStop in it. Even our college town, Robbie, where you and I went, Mount Pleasant, Michigan. It's two crossroads. Like, that's it. There's like a Meijer and a Kroger. And there is a GameStop in there. So, you know, like, I think that is a direct road into Middle America, and I love the idea.
The NorCal Region FGC event went down over the weekend. In Street Fighter V, it was Japanese veteran Tokido who won in a grueling full set over Punk, who continues to impress in 2019. Punk came out of losers and reset the bracket, but Tokido was able to hold off the American in the very last round through chip damage.
Now what happened here, Norris? Because you've said that, listen, Punk is the player to watch this year.
Tokido came to play!
And obviously doing very well, getting to the finals, mm-hmm. but not being able to overcome Tokido. This was kind of the same trajectory that he had 2 years ago when he was also favored in a lot of these matchups. Is this going to be another year where Punk just keeps playing out of his mind only to come up short?
I don't think so. I think when you watch that matchup against Tokido, he really barely eked out that victory. And I think Punk right now might be the best Street Fighter player in the world. His neutral game, his hit confirms, his pokes, everything about his game and the character that he's using is so strong. What's to a point where other players are saying, we need to stop playing against that character. You have to figure out how to beat Punk.
So what's his Achilles heel right now? What's his problem? Why in these big pressure situations does he come up short?
I mean, it seems to be against Tokido specifically because everybody else this season, he's been beating.
Viewership for the Stage 1 playoffs on ABC was better than expected. According to Nielsen, the grand finals pulled in roughly 367,000 viewers, whereas the semifinals on Saturday brought in about 306,000. While those numbers are far behind the NCAA tournament, they outpace NHL games for even popular teams. More importantly, about a third of those viewers are in the highly coveted 18 to 49 age demographic.
And this is huge. This is, now, again, the first time esports have been on national network television, and the response seems to be very good. And now, obviously, the NHL has had a rough couple of years, and I mean really
you mean
rough.
Decades?
That's fair.
Rough decade.
But to know that, you know, you can come out and end up being comparable to having comparable audience numbers to something something that's been on TV as long as hockey, mm-hmm. I think that that's got to make OWL and the whole of esports feel pretty good.
Well, yeah. Especially it's that age demographic, getting in that 18 to 49 demographic where so many traditional sports are just dying for those
numbers. That's where we're seeing the biggest die-off in terms of audience numbers is in that younger bracket.
What do you think those numbers would look like if you could tune in at the same time every week and reliably get your esports source?
Well, I mean, never mind 18 to 24. 18 to 24 is just a dead zone. Like, there's nothing happening. So getting anything in that 18 to anything demographic is notable for sure.
Ubisoft has announced the return of the Rainbow Six U.S. Nationals. The marathon season will run from April 6th through the finals in December. There will be two broadcasts per week, and the winning team will take home the lion's share of a $156,000 prize pool. That's a market increase from the $50,000 prize pool they had in 2018. In addition, the winning team will be awarded the title of Team USA, which went to Team Rogue last year.
I think this is interesting. You know, the Rainbow Six scene has gotten a little bit of love in terms of, you know, like that documentary that came out last year.
Growth over the last couple years.
It definitely does, and rising prize pools will help as well. I would love to see it break out of the middle of the pack, because that's very much where it is in terms of, you know, competing with other esports.
It'll be interesting to see what Ubisoft is going to do with Rainbow Six Siege at E3 this year.
Yeah.
Atlanta Reign DPS Dufresne has announced his retirement from Overwatch League ahead of the beginning of Stage 2. While he notified the Reign he would be retiring before the Stage 1 playoff, he wanted to wait until after to formally announce it. The Reign said he didn't want to be a distraction for the team. He'll still remain with the Reign as a streamer, where he hopes to be able to stream longer sessions and more consistently.
Wow, that's
I have
real
to say, yeah, this is real disappointing for me. I mean, obviously, Dufresne was great for the Atlanta Reign, and it's not like going into this, he didn't know that streaming is more lucrative than playing in the pro scene.
Stage 1 OWL champions, the Vancouver Titans, have officially named their home arena for the 2020 season of Overwatch League. They'll be playing out of the Rogers Arena, currently home to the Vancouver Canucks NHL team. The 18,000-seat arena first opened in 1995 and is owned by the same group that owns the Titans. Even with a section tarp to accommodate the stage presentation, it'll be interesting to see if the Titans can sell out the arena.
18,000 is way too much.
Yeah, 18,000 is going to be daunting to fill.
You know, when you think about the arena that's being built in Philadelphia, that's 3,500. I'd much rather you underpromise and overdeliver.
The Boston Uprising have unveiled the opening bracket for the Collegiate Cup coming up this month in April. The first round gets underway on April 6th at 6 p.m. with Emerson B taking on the University of Rhode Island, Emerson A versus New England College, and Chaplin versus Stonehill. All in all, 11 teams from 9 schools are set to compete. The semifinals will be held on April 28th at the Back Bay Event Center and will be free and open to the public. The winning team will earn a trip to Los Angeles to watch the Uprising compete.
And of course, if you want more information about that, you can check out the website uprising.overwatchleague.com.
That's all for the Checkpoint XP Esports Gaming Update. For more, head on over to our website, checkpointxp.com.
Thanks, Sarah, for the update. While Overwatch League and National PUBG League were both having an off weekend, at least here in the States, the first round of the playoffs in LCS got underway. Joe, how'd it go?
Yeah, so I actually want to start talking about the viewership. Viewership was way up over the Spring Split playoffs last year. Despite the LCS struggling for a few weeks, the first week of the playoffs saw 25% growth in viewership over last year.
Wow.
The LEC, 50% growth over last year. So major growth for both LCS and LEC. They got to be really happy about
that. Esports is becoming more palatable across the board. It's become more okay for people to just sit back and watch it, and it's more available now than ever before. I think that's great.
Absolutely. Let's talk some results here.
Sure. So if I have to be honest, I think it's pretty much what you would have expected. FlyQuest led off the weekend as they took on the Golden Guardians. It was kind of a back and forth matchup until FlyQuest finally emerged victorious 3-2. I'll say this for Golden Guardians. This is a good season for them to have two consecutive dead last splits, make the playoffs. You don't just get, you know, swept in the first round. You at least take your team to 5 games. You got to feel pretty good about the split if you're the Golden Guardians.
So is Froggen the difference?
Yeah, I think he certainly seems like it. So I'd give him a lot of credit. The whole team just seemed to have way better communication than they had last split. Like, it didn't seem like they were making quite so many stupid mistakes that we saw out of the last split. So
fair enough.
There's a lot to it.
Gotcha.
Meanwhile, Team Solo Mid looked strong as they only dropped one game against Echo Fox. They took that series 3-1. So this one, I mean, TSM looked like one of the best teams in the league going, at least in the last couple weeks of the split. They can kind of continued that. They dropped a game to Echo Fox, but then powered back and just looked really good for the rest of the series. They're going to take on Cloud9. So since Team Liquid had the number one overall seed, they got to choose who they want their opponent to be in the semifinals.
Oh, interesting.
They chose FlyQuest, which sets up the Cloud9 and TSM matchup on Saturday. This is, of course, the most storied rivalry probably in League of Legends is Cloud9 versus TSM.
Right.
I'm really, really looking forward to that match on Saturday.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, didn't FlyQuest beat Team Liquid a couple weeks ago?
I'm not taking anything from the last 2 weeks with too much seriousness for teams that already had their spot locked up. I'll be curious to see how it goes here in the playoffs. And yeah, on Sunday, we're going to get Team Liquid facing off against FlyQuest, and the winners will play next week in the finals.
Do you think they're going to go into that matchup trying to rectify that loss? Like, here, we're going to set the record straight here in the playoffs.
You're asking Mixel syndrome.
Is there an element of... All right, you guys got the fun game last time. Now we're going to show you what we can actually do.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely a little bit of an added element of pressure to say, okay, you played us when we weren't at our best. Now you're going to see our best, and you're going to see what that looks like. Yeah, I think so.
All right, well, listen, we want to hear from you. Are you going to be watching the next round of playoffs? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint _XP on Instagram. Coming up next on Checkpoint XP Daily, it's time for another round of Name That Price Craigslist Edition. This time, all the items we've found a bid on have come from the Boston area in honor of PAX East.
In Boston, I gotta tell you, you guys have some weird, weird things going on for sale in your area.
Stick around, that conversation is ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily from Beasley Esports XP.
Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio. This is Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on ESPN Radio 1300 AM in New Haven, Connecticut, as well as Fox Sports 910 AM in Richmond, Virginia. Make sure you're following us on our officially partnered Twitch channel over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. We've got a ton of new emotes, including each of our beautiful faces, as well as not one but two cat emotes. Tali and Fritz, our actual cats, are now Twitch emotes, and there's only one place to get them. That's over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. It's time for us to play another round of Name That Price Craigslist Edition. Joe's found a bunch of new items for us to bid on from Craigslist, and in honor of PAX East last weekend, all these items have come from the Boston area. So everyone on 98.5, the Sports Hub of Boston, listen for your item, I guess.
These are your people.
That's right. So you know. That's right.
All right. So, yeah, of course, I'm going to give you guys the item. I'll give you the description. If there was no description, I'll give you the picture. I'll tell you what the picture was of. And you'll have to guess as close as you can to the actual asking price without going over.
We have yet to hit a picture only, no description entry, and I'm curious what that is going to be like.
That'll be an interesting day when that happens.
All right.
Here's what the first one, first item up for bid. We have We Workout with Jenny McCarthy.
Oh, no.
What? That's a... What?
This is a Wii Your Shape workout with Jenny McCarthy.
That's used a thing?
Used once and put back in the box, which is maybe the most apt description of that product that I can imagine, is used once and put back in the box.
Fair enough.
What was that show Jenny McCarthy used to be on?
Singled Out.
Singled Out.
You know, wait, you know who was the host for that show?
Who?
Chris Hardwick.
No kidding.
Yes.
You're right.
Yes. A very young Chris Hardwick. I believe that was one of his first jobs.
Gig.
Yeah.
All right, Norris, what do you bid for Wii Workout with Jenny McCarthy?
$10.
All right. Nate, over to you.
$2.
Okay. Robbie, over
to
you.
We go right in the middle and say $5.
All right. Robbie, you're right on the nose.
Oh,
they wanted $5 for it.
Well nice done. Job, Robbie.
Well done, Robbie. Up next.
By the way, also, too rich for my blood.
Yeah, I
totally
agree. They're asking about $5 too much.
Yeah.
Up next, we have a rare Nintendo Switch promo poster. He says, I received it from a GameStop employee. I looked online and could not find it anywhere. That's the entirety of the description of it.
It's a what poster?
A Switch. Nintendo Switch promo poster.
Is there a picture?
It's a picture of the Switch with like March 2017 on it. It's the poster you saw at a GameStop.
This?
Nate, you have the first bit on the rare, quote-unquote, rare Nintendo Switch promo poster.
Okay, I actually have a little bit of insight into this world as a former GameStop employee myself, because I have a few of these stands. I'm going to say 50 cents.
Okay, 50 cents. Robbie, over to you.
$1.
$1 for the promo poster for the Switch.
One.
Norris, over to you.
$5.
All right. Norris, you are correct. He is asking for the rare Nintendo Switch promo poster, $100.
What? Hold on. Is this a poster or one of those like cardboard stands?
No, it's a poster.
Boston.
A poster for your wall.
Boston, come on.
You are drunk.
Stop it.
All right. Up next, we have Medieval 1 PS1 factory sealed. So Medieval, get what is pictured, game is factory sealed. Now, the picture shows it does, in fact, have the original shrink wrap, but there is suspiciously a piece of scotch tape on it. So I can't help but feel like he cut the shrink wrap, took the disc out, and put it back in and tape it shut. I can't prove that, but I can't help but feel like he did.
Oh, no.
Okay. Robbie, you have the first bid this time.
I'm going to say $50.
Okay. Norris, over to you.
$35.
All right. And Nate, it is your call.
I'm going to say $25. I do love Medieval. It's a great game.
I agree.
I don't think it's a collector's item, though. But, I'm going to say $25.
Robbie, you are correct with your $50 bid. He is asking $150 for it.
What?
This one made the list for Nate's $150 bid. I was hoping he would do that again.
Wasn't that game on the PS Classic? No, it wasn't.
I don't think it was. No. Yeah, I don't know if it got released digitally on PSN or not.
I don't think so either.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. I want to thank everyone listening on 98.5, the Sports Hub of Boston, and the team at 980 in Washington, D.C. We're currently playing Name That Price Craigslist Edition, going through some of Boston's items that they've put up on Craigslist and trying to guess their value. I have won 0 points. Robbie seems to be doing the best. What,
two?
Two, and Norris has one.
All right, so up next, we've got a Nintendo Switch. It's in good working condition, comes with two games, Skyrim and Diablo 3. It's got a travel case, an Anker USB-C cable, an official Nintendo charging stand, original manual, boxes, and bags for accessories, and a playstand screen protector.
What are the strings?
It looks like it's in good shape. It looks fine to me.
Okay.
So, Norris, you've got the first bid.
Oof. $350.
Okay.
Ooh. I'm going to say $450 because there's a lot of stuff in there.
That's reasonable.
$200.
All right. You guys have all overbid.
What?
This person is asking $0 for it.
And this guy's a murderer.
They say they would like to donate. I would like to donate my Nintendo Switch to a family that will make good use of it and could use it.
Boston. You're going to make me weep here.
But I'm worried that might be trying to lure someone to a house.
I have concerns about that one. I have seen how this movie starts. It starts exactly like that.
But if it's a legit offering, that is very heartwarming.
That's awesome. I think that's a great thing to do for anyone who has gaming items that are going unused. Find a good home for
them to go to. Stranger danger.
Up next, we've got Donkey Kong Jr. Math. For sale is a rare 5-screw copy of Donkey Kong Jr. Math for the Nintendo Entertainment System. What can I say? It's simple math, only the way an ape could do it. I did not know this was a thing. This is actually teaching you like math by playing Donkey Kong Jr.
This is a real game?
It looked real to me, yeah. Nate, you've got the first bid on this strange, rare item.
$5.
Okay.
No, this is a collector's thing here. I'm going to go $75.
Okay.
Wow. Okay.
Norris?
$50.
$50. All right.
Wait, hang on. Before you tell us, were they selling it as a collector's item? Did they know what they had?
Yeah, I would say they called it rare, so yeah, I'd assume they did.
All right, fair.
They won $100 for it, so Robbie, that's a point
all
for
right.
you.
Wow.
Yeah, that was very well done, Robbie.
Wow.
Let's see. Oh,
we got time for one more.
Yeah, okay. How about this one? Super Nintendo with Chrono Trigger. Everything works awesome, it comes with all cords, and is ready to be played. Robbie,
is there a picture? It looks fine?
It looks old, but it looks fine. It looks like it's been in a house for a while.
Fair man. $80.
Okay. Norris, over to you.
$150.
$150. And Nate,
I'm going to split the difference and go $100.
$100. All right. Nate, you would be correct. You're actually going to get a point. They want $140 for it. Well done.
And I can't say that is a terrible price.
No, it's actually not. I mean, you know, a working Super Nintendo, that's pretty tough to find these days.
I think a working copy of Chrono Trigger is probably $70-$80 by itself. Easily.
That's very true. Although there weren't, you know, that's not a limited run game. It's not like they only printed so many of them. They made a lot of copies of Chrono Trigger. So it's not like it's a terribly hard SNES game to find, but that is actually a legitimately good price. Thanks, Boston. That's some really interesting insight to your city.
Thank you, Bubsy.
Well, listen, we want to hear from you. Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. That's going to do it for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website at CheckpointXP.com for insight on esports and gaming, as well as our growing collection of podcasts and interviews. Make sure you tune in tomorrow when we'll ask our social media followers what game they want to see brought to VR. And join us Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern live at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at WeirdAtLast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. I want to thank my crew, lead segment producing by Joe Sloan, producing and booking help from Christine Solis. Big thanks to Sarah Skopic over at the Checkpoint News Desk, and of course my co-hosts who pull double duty as producers for Checkpoint XP. Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at CheckpointXP.com.